Hello, this is Alton Banks from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Angier. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And we begin this week's reading of the Triangle Business Journal, as usual, on the biz page, and which there are a couple of short articles. Under the heading of Outer Banks comes the article, NC County Drops Recognition Effort. Dare County has dropped an effort to recognize places where at least 70% of their employees have been vaccinated against COVID-19. Kelly Netnan, a Dare County spokeswoman for the Department of Health and Human Services, told the Outer Banks Voice, "Some individuals have used this initiative as an opportunity to spread fear, negativity, and hate. Our businesses work too hard to endure unfounded criticism." The effort had intended to reward establishments that sought to make patrons more comfortable and safe, but the effort drew some blowback on social media. And under the heading of Big Demand, Apartment Market Back on Track. New data from a company that analyzes apartment prices shows the Triangle's rental market is recovering as the pandemic begins to recede. ApartmentData.com shows occupancy for apartments across the market at 92.6%, with an average monthly rental rate of $1,194. The firm shows 15 communities and 4,097 units opened in the last year, with 9 communities under construction and a staggering 89 communities, that's with 25,034 units, being proposed. The most expensive rates over the last 3 months are the downtown Durham Duke University submarket at $1.57 per square foot per month, followed by downtown Raleigh and midtown Raleigh, both at $1.47 a square foot per month. Under the heading of National Survey comes the article, Fuquay Varina gets nod as top suburb. For decades, the Wake County town of Fuquay Varina was a small, low-profile place, rarely listed on top town lists or noticed on a map. But all that has changed. In recent years, the town has seen explosive growth as one of the fastest-growing towns in the state. And this month, Homes.com named it the 6th best suburb in the country to move to in 2021. The study scored towns based on median home price, square footage, and price-to-income ratio, as well as education scores, work-from-home index, and crime index, among others. Fuquay Varina scored well on all of these, landing in 6th place, sandwiched between two small towns in Texas, and the only North Carolina suburb represented in the top 10. And under the heading of C-Suite comes the article, Twitty Takes Role at Channel Advisor. E-commerce software developer Channel Advisor is about to see changes at the top. Diana Allen, the firm's general counsel since 2014, will become a senior advisor June 1st. In her stead comes Kathy Twitty, called an excellent choice to fill this critical role by CEO David Spitz. Twitty, who has been general counsel at Maine Pharma since 2017, has had roles at several big firms, including Quintiles, now known as IQVIA. And on the heading of Boylan Heights, the article, Historic Raleigh Home, Now a Hotel. A historic house in Raleigh turned boutique hotel and event space will open this spring. Local couple Sarah and Jeff Shepard are now accepting reservations for the new Heights House Hotel at 308 South Boylan Avenue. After years of planning, they transformed Montfort Hall, the mansion that was built in 1858, into a hotel with 9 guest rooms and an event space for up to 150 people. Now people are more open to traveling or to just have a staycation, Sarah Shepherd says. They're getting more comfortable to have small events. We feel lucky to help people celebrate or just enjoy a nice day. The Italianate-style building features restored 15-foot ceilings, original hardwood floors, and grand common areas with a modern Victorian design. For guests, amenities include European-style breakfast, offerings from local dining establishments, a parlor bar, turndown service, and in-suite luxury options. The house is in the Boylan Heights neighborhood on the edge of downtown Raleigh. Reservation dates begin May 6th, with rates starting at $229 a night. And finally, on this week's biz page, under the heading Frightening Day, comes the article, How a Red Sox Star Saved a Local Life. The CEO of a growing Raleigh's company was 4 years old when he was at the center of a terrifying moment at Fenway Park. Jonathan Keane's father got seats behind the bench at the Boston Red Sox in a nationally televised game on August the 7th of 1982. But in the fourth inning, Boston's Dave Stapleton slashed a ball that rocketed in the stands and hit Keane just above his left eye. A shocked Fenway Park fell silent. But Red Sox star Jim Rice reached into the stands, grabbed the boy, and carried him to the Red Sox dugout, where the medical team jumped in. 5 days later, Jonathan left the hospital, and Rice's quick thinking saved his life. For college, Keane enrolled at NC State University, wanting to come south and try something different. He graduated in 2000 with a degree in business management and is now the co-founder and CEO of Customer HD, a Raleigh software firm. Our company is growing incredibly fast, he tells Biz. We are an outsourced customer service company. We're just over 3 years old and have over 200 employees. We are on pace to be over 300 employees by the end of this year. Raleigh is a long way from Fenway, but Keane, who still has a scar over his left eye, says, "It's really crazy how often the Rice story comes up. I think the picture brings a lot of emotion to people. It's a great example of someone doing what is right and helping somebody out. I think people need that." Next, we turn the page to the tech and finance section of this week's TBJ. And the article under Seeking Normalcy is entitled, CEOs Face Vaccine Choices. Vaccines finally are becoming plentiful, with Group 5 now eligible for vaccines in North Carolina as of April 7, and mass vaccination sites opening up more and more around the state. And that has North Carolina's employers weighing how to handle whether to insist on vaccinations for their teams. An Elon University poll released in February found that 20% of North Carolinians did not plan to get vaccinated. Most Triangle businesses have either come out against mandating the vaccine or still haven't taken a concrete position on whether an employee requirement is even appropriate, business leaders around the market tell Triangle Business Journal. Here's a summary of what some key local leaders are saying about the issue. So from Greg Lowe, CEO of Cree, "No, we will not mandate it. I think your health and your body, that's all you, and that's a personal decision." Igor Jablikov, CEO of Raleigh-based Prion, "We're letting people decide for themselves, but our hypothesis is, and we deal with statistics, is that the majority of people will get it anyway, so there will be de facto herd immunity." From Martin Meeson, president and CEO of Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies, "We don't have a stance at the moment. We're in emergency use authorization, and I think it's important we move through that before we start mandating. That said, I'm highly encouraging everyone to get vaccines." From Mary Willis, CEO of the Fidelity Bank in Fuquay Varina, "We are not mandating employees getting the vaccines at this time." And finally, from Jay Strickland, founder of Garner IT firm Wingswept, "We're not mandating the vaccine. We've set up resources for employees to communicate with each other about tactical level opportunities to get the vaccine, but we are not encouraging or mandating that anyone get the shot. And under the heading of insider trading comes the article, Triangle Execs Take More Than $100 Million in Stock Sales in 2021 So Far. Insiders at Triangle Companies have walked away with nearly $103 million in combined stock sales in 2021, and that's just for the first quarter. A sweep of securities filings detailing individual insider stock sales, including sales that happened as part of compensation packages, shows executives and directors at Triangle Area Companies pocketed nearly $13.5 million in March alone. While it's a softer figure than the $60.5 million and the $24.7 million inked for January and February, respectively, it still represents major transactions by Triangle executives. And here are just a few of the biggest inside stock sales of this quarter. For Bandwidth, the person involved is David Morgan. He's the CEO, and he sold stocks on the 7th of January, right over $20,000, and on the 4th of January, about $13,800. The company Phreesia has Chaim Indig, the CEO, on the 20th of January, $10,300. Martin Marietta Materials with Ward Nye as the CEO on the 11th of March, $6,747,000. Bandwidth, David Morgan, CEO on the 5th of January, $6,002,000. Channel Advisor with David Spitz as a CEO on the 18th of February, $6,141,000. Phreesia has two people, Thomas Altier, the CFO, on 19 February at $5,554,000, and Evan Roberts, who is the COO, on the 6th of January at $5,355,000. Avaya Holdings with James Chirico, who's the CEO, on the 16th of February, $5,252,000. And finally, Phreesia on the 17th of March, David Lineski, who is the SVP, $3,058,000. And also under this heading, under the heading of development, comes NC's project pipeline exceeds 63,000 jobs, with potential for 63,000 new jobs on the line. North Carolina's bouncing back when it comes to economic development. As of April 1st, the state's top recruitment agency, that's the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, was looking at a pipeline with 191 total recruitment and expansion projects. If North Carolina were to win all of them, it would mean 63,000 new jobs and $22 billion in new investment. That compares to the nearly 200 active projects we were working at the onset of the pandemic, ADPNC CEO Chris Chung says. Here's a look at the top projects by sector. For food, beverage, and agriculture, that's 36. And let me see, these jobs are, I guess those are 36 projects. Chemicals, plastics, and rubber, 18 projects. Textiles, apparel, and sporting goods, 14 projects. Biotech, pharma, and life sciences, 19 products, projects. Automotive and motor vehicles, 15 projects. And finally, IT with 10 projects. An exceedingly optimistic forecast, I think. So, looks good for North Carolina. Under the heading of NC State Grad comes the article, Regions Bank Puts New SBA Leader in Raleigh. Regions Bank latest head of Small Business Administration Lending will be based in Raleigh. The bank has named Caroline Taylor as its new Senior Vice President and head of SBA lending. Taylor was a cheerleader at NC State University, and her husband played football for the Wolfpack. The Angier native says it's definitely coming back home. Taylor, who will move to Raleigh from Richmond, Virginia, says her mission will be to grow standard SBA loans, and it's a pivotal time as SBA lending has become crucial for small businesses impacted by the pandemic. regions provided about $5 billion in Paycheck Protection Program loans in 2020. Obviously, we had great success with the PPP. We reached thousands of borrowers struggling, she says. My charge is to really set the stride on how we can continue to expand our programs to all of our communities. Next, we turn the page to the real estate page, and we find under the heading of Downtown Raleigh the article, Developer Pivots on Project. A seven-story apartment complex is now what Robert Ferris plans. A Raleigh architect and developer has pivoted his plans for a downtown Raleigh property that was once slated for a mixed-use office complex, with site plans recently filed for a seven-story apartment complex on the site. Earlier this month, Robert Ferris filed plans for the City Gateway Apartments, calling for 286 apartments across a massive seven-story building plus a small retail component. Ferris is president and CEO of SFL plus A Architects. That's the letters SFL, then the plus sign and A Architects, and manager of First Floor, both based in Raleigh. Filings with the city also list New York-based Spandrel Development Partners, LLC, as involved on the project. The project is situated on 1.9 acres at 120 Kindley Street, next to the site of Dominion Realty's proposed Salisbury Square project on the property to the north. Ferris bought the property in 2016 for $4.4 million through an affiliate of his firm's. Filings with the city call for 210 one-bedroom units and 76 two-bedroom units. Amenities will include a pool and rooftop terrace. Ferris hopes to have the conceptual designs and renderings finalized later this year. Ferris says he has yet to determine the timeline or pricing of the project as material costs continue to rise after manufacturers around the world paused or slowed production in the early months of the pandemic. Urban Design Partners is the civil engineer and landscape architect on the project. Filings list Humphreys and Partners Architects, LP, as the architect. The parcel was originally slated for a 10-story office mixed-use project and are already lined up a large tenant in the Explorer School, a K-8 charter school program that was seeking to combine its middle school on Hillsborough Street and its elementary school on New Bern Avenue into one building. Ferris said lenders were hesitant to fund an office project with a school tenant. Then COVID hit, and Ferris shelved the office plans and began working on the designs for the apartment. He still plans to develop an office building on the site, though the timeline for that has yet to be determined. Also on the real estate page under the heading of Homes Coming is the article, Raleigh Developer Drops $7 Million on Apex Land. Raleigh-based Envision Homes affiliate Wellfield Development recently paid a little over $7 million for six parcels slated for the park at Wimberley, calling for 130 homes. The properties are situated on around 43 acres at 1405 Wimberley Road, which is west of 540. Eric Sullivan of Mid Street Realty represented the owners of five of the six parcels. He says rising land prices and the dwindling rural character of the surrounding area have become a strong incentive for longtime residents to sell. And under the heading of Johnston County, the article, Developer Assembles Land for Thousands of Smithfield Homes. Developer Ray Perkins has quietly assembled land in Smithfield for years with a vision for a nearly 2,000-acre development south of downtown. Now, with the bulk of the land under his control, he's begun courting developers to buy and build on it. This month, Perkins and his group, NRP Ventures LLC, began marketing their plans for the assemblage in Smithfield, with most of it fronting Route 95 and bounded by Mallard Road and Brogdon Road south of the downtown. Once complete, Perkins hopes to have 1,934 acres under his control and entitlements for up to 5,315 new homes and 1.6 million square feet of commercial space, according to conceptual plans he shared with Triangle Business Journal. The project has the potential to transform Smithfield which currently has roughly 13,000 residents, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. And finally, on this real estate page, under the heading of condos, comes the article, Transformation of Downtown Cary Continues. A Virginia-based home builder with big plans for the Triangle has proposed a condo project in Cary, situated just south of the site for the downtown park. Last month, developer Stanley Martin Homes filed plans for Byram Street Flats, calling for 68 units and a development featuring the company's stacked two-story condo design. The project is situated on nearly 3 acres across five parcels at the corner of Byram Street and Kildare Farm Road, just across the street from Cary Elementary School, south of the upcoming downtown park. Next, we turn to the retail and restaurants page of this week's TBJ, and under the heading of Renovated, we find the article, Deco Raleigh Coming Back. A downtown Raleigh shop that has been a go-to place for unique gifts for the last 9 years will reopen for in-store shopping this month after undergoing renovations. Deco Raleigh, which features work from local artisans, will open April 23rd at its colorful building near the corner of South Salisbury and West Target Streets. While the location was closed, owner Pam Blondin and her staff switched to online-only sales. Blondin first chose to explore e-commerce last year as a result of the pandemic, which was a similar pivot for businesses that previously relied on brick-and-mortar traffic. But those retailers had to come up with new ways to attract business when the start of the pandemic stopped people from visiting the stores. I opened the store because I wanted to help make something happen downtown, Blondin says. So the idea of doing fulfillment for online shopping was not what I imagined I'd be doing. It wasn't really consistent with the idea of having a place that people wanted to go to, but we had to find a way to sell online. In March of 2020, the shop closed for about 6 weeks when the statewide stay-at-home order went into effect. Blondin furloughed her employees, including 2 full-time and 6 to 8 part-time workers, for about 6 weeks until she reopened for customers by appointment. Walk-ins were allowed to enter the approximately 3,000-square-foot location before it closed February 15th, as long as room was available for social distancing. Also, the operating hours had been cut from 50 hours to about 30 hours each week. Blondin started offering select items online in December, in time for the holidays, which helped sales, she said. The store ran about 50 to 60% of the previous year's sales. She put those earnings toward the renovation project, which cost under $20,000. Well, next we reach the cover story of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and it's entitled An Epic Call. For years, the town of Cary has seen tremendous growth as local developers and investors fueled a surge in commercial development in and around downtown. Now, another Cary company, Epic Games, plans to build a massive corporate headquarters in the town, further rocketing Cary's transformation from a small Wake County town to a status as one of the state's larger players. Epic Games upended expectations for the redevelopment of Cary Town Center last year after buying the property in a $95 million sale. The move comes as, across Cary, investors and developers are pouring money into the booming town, densifying its downtown and filling the surrounding areas with larger and more expensive projects. Among the largest construction began last year on the $1 billion Fenton project, potentially across the street from the future Epic Games campus. It comes as Cary becomes increasingly built out, sending developers scrambling for the remaining land in town, and land prices go ever higher each year. And it marks a dramatic change in the town, long a bedroom community for workers in Research Triangle Park and other towns. The term triangle may denote Raleigh, downtown, and Chapel Hill, but in fact, Cary is a rising force in the market with a blistering commercial real estate scene and a downtown that has transformed from quaint and quiet to one of the region's hottest locations. There's an assemblage downtown that's $1.3 million an acre, says Moss Withers, Lee & Associates president and principal, when you're seeing an assemblage of 2.75 acres for $1.3 million an acre, that's pretty wild. Meanwhile, project sizes continue to grow. In 2020, the town saw 563 commercial building permits for a total value of $413.2 million, up from just $207 million in 2019, and $296.3 million in 2018 as of the end of the 2020 fiscal year, according to financial data from the town. Residential buildings actually saw a dip in 2020, coming in at 2,380 permits for a total value of $254.94 million. That was down from $293.3 million in 2019 and $366.4 million in 2018. However, the boost in commercial development more than made up for it, with the total value of permits across the commercial and residential sectors coming in at $664.1 million. That's up from $500.6 million in 2019 and $662.6 million in 2018. Meanwhile, the population in Cary has ballooned for years. Last summer, the town hit 170,322, according to data from the town, up from 167,547 the year before and 163,930 the year before that. And the development boom is expected to continue as projects around the town begin to rise and town officials anticipate beginning talks with Epic Games on the company's plans for the property later this year. The town of Cary has been growing for decades, but there's one project Withers says kicked off the explosion in office and commercial development downtown. In 2015, Jordan Gusenhoven, principal with Chatham Street Commercial, unveiled plans for a landmark Midtown Square project, calling for a multi-building retail and office complex on property that his uncle, George Jordan III, owned at 205 East Chatham Street and that had been in the family for generations. The project was ambitious for a downtown Cary at the time, calling for a Bond Brothers Beer Company space, plus a 25,000-square-foot, three-story speculative office building at 215 East Chatham, which the developers acquired the year before. Within one 50,000-square-foot project, you will find redevelopment, renovation, adaptive reuse, and public-private partnership, Gusenhoven says. The project was real proof of concept for the revitalization efforts in downtown, and the positive feedback from the community was immediately evident. It was the speculative office that caught developers' eye as an opportunity to prove that Cary was ready for an influx of commercial growth. Prior to Bond Brothers, downtown office space in Cary was rare, and even those interested in it would be taking a big risk on an unproven product. The vision's been there, Withers says. The problem was the data to prove that the data would work. Despite the uncertainty, Gusenhoven and Jordan moved ahead, and soon office tenants were lining up for space. They took that chance. That filled up before it was even constructed, Withers says. It showed there was demand for office space in Cary, and it started turning heads. Suddenly, developers saw there was high demand for office space in downtown Cary, and they quickly got to work. Already, local developers were busy scouring the town for opportunities. Now, with data in place and a success story to point to, the access to opportunities in town only increased. The Ladd family, the Alexander family, Bill Zahn and his partnership, they all started looking for ways to adapt and reuse properties, Withers said. Over the last few years, developers in and around the area have been pitching developments in Cary, with a flood of upscale residential and mixed-use commercial projects proposed in the rapidly urbanizing downtown. The project joined a number of projects underway in Cary, both by other developers and by the town, which had already been working on its plan to guide the growth of the expanding town and its urbanizing downtown district. As Cary runs out of land, you're going to find more suburban, urban feel with redevelopment opportunities, says Zahn of Triangle Real Estate Company. Downtown, I think the key drivers would be first the renovation of Academy Street and the Downtown Business District. And the second business driver for the future is the downtown Cary Park. The Academy Street project was an $8 million investment in upgrading the street and making it more consumer-friendly. It also connected growing parts of the town with the site of the future park. Planning for the park began in 2001, calling for around 7 acres of open, amenity, and event space in the heart of downtown Cary at 319 South Academy. The town announced the start of pre-construction work on the park last month, and plans are in the work for the second phase. Amid all this growth, two developers began planning major projects in Cary. In 2017, developers Hines, Columbia Development, and USAA Real Estate first unveiled plans for Fenton, a mixed-use destination to feature office, retail, and apartments across 87 acres in Cary. Situated off Carytown Boulevard, plans for the project continue to grow over the years and today call for 350,000 square feet of retail space, 200,000 square feet of Class A office space, 357 luxury rental homes, a 12-story hotel, and a high-end dine-in theater. Altogether, the project stretches for 92 acres and makes up an estimated $1 billion in investment by the developers. And by 2020, construction got underway. The road has had some bumps. A few months into the pandemic, the developer said its high-end movie theater tenant, CineBistro, was withdrawing. Developers did secure a replacement in Florida-based Paragon Theaters. A bigger blow to the project came earlier this year, when Wegman announced it was no longer planning to bring a store to the project, citing the surge in online shopping over the last year and the results it's seeing from its existing 3 stores in the Triangle. The Rochester, New York-based grocer had been slated as the anchor of the project for years, and the developer had yet to announce a replacement. Other retail anchors that signed on to space at Fenton told Triangle Business Journal that they were not troubled by the news. Together, the projects represent major investments in the growing town and opportunity for developers. In 2019, as plans for Fenton were taking shape, New York developer Turnbridge Equities unveiled its plans for the transformation of the Cary Town Center Mall. The mall had been in operation for years and saw a number of failed attempts to bring major tenants in to revitalize the struggling property. Turnbridge bought the property for $31 million in 2019 as it worked on plans for the property. At its peak, they called for up to 1.2 million square feet of office space, 360,000 square feet of commercial use, 450 hotel rooms, and 1,800 multifamily and townhouse dwelling units as allowed by the zoning the town approved. Late last year, Turnbridge announced they named the project Carolina Yards, and construction seemed imminent when suddenly things changed. On December 31st, video game giant Epic Games closed on the $95 million purchase of the property, announcing the site to be its new global headquarters. The company was light on the details and has yet to reveal additional information about the design for the property, though town officials expect to see the beginning of the entitlements process kicked off this spring. Little is known about what Epic plans to include in the project. Among the little that is known, filings with the town of Cary show that the Dave & Buster's restaurant that operated on the site for years appears to be staying on the property and has filed plans to relocate to the site of the former Jump Street location. Additionally, the town is continuing work on its plans for an indoor sports complex slated for a portion of the site. Wake County and the city of Raleigh approved funding for the project last year before the sale to Epic Games, and it's unclear how this project will tie into the new campus, if it will at all. Today, Epic Games has yet to release any additional information about its plans. Town officials say they expect to see the first submissions this spring. All this growth in Cary soon attracted interest from developers in and out of town, with the city fielding proposals for a growing number of large urban projects in and around downtown. To the east of Bond Brothers, Raleigh-based developer Northview Partners filed plans for Meridian East Chatham, calling for 220 apartments and over 8,000 square feet of commercial retail space. The massive mixed-use project would rise as high as 5 stories, overlooking downtown. Meanwhile, Chatham Street Commercial has continued bringing new plans and projects to downtown Cary. In 2018, the company unveiled plans for Chatham Walk, a 33-unit condo project at the corner of Chatham Street and Urban Drive. Down the road from Bond Brothers, Chatham Street Commercial is working on plans for its major Rogers Building redevelopment at 149 East Chatham Street. The redevelopment would transform two buildings, one built in 1920 and the other in 1957, into a single mixed-use structure with retail and commercial uses on the ground floor and office space on the second and third floor. Meanwhile, as the downtown Cary Park approaches the official start to construct, a number of new developers and investments have flooded into the area. Starting with the completion of the new Cary Regional Library and accompanying parking deck, the town found itself with excess land on the southern and eastern portions of the block. That land ultimately went to Academy Park, a Cary development team made up of the Neer family, that's K-N-I-E-R, the Stevenson family, and the Zahn family, with a plan to bring two mixed-use buildings abutting the library and the adjoining parking deck. Now, if your head is spinning from all this talk, let me just list the 8 major projects that are ongoing or about to begin in downtown and the surrounding Cary area. There's Rogers Building, that's 149 East Chatham Street. That's going to be 3 stories. There's Epic Games at the Cary Town Center at 1105 Walnut Street. There's Academy Park Cary, that's at 121 Walnut Street. And there is Downtown Cary Park at 319 South Academy Street. There's Meridian East Chatham, that's at 229 East Chatham Street. And Park Station at 115 East Park Street. Chatham Walk, that's the 7th project, that's a 33 condo project in downtown Cary. And finally, the Fenton, which is along Carytown Boulevard. The $1 billion mixed-use destination will include 350,000 square feet of retail space. Zahn soon expanded his holdings on the block again, acquiring the Mayton Inn with a group of investors, including Neer, George Jordan, Gussenhoven, and Grant Yarber. A few months later, businessmen Zahn and Neer closed on the purchase of 307 South Academy Street, home of the Cotton House Craft Brewers Tap House, which opened in 2019 and also recently expanded in downtown Cary. The project has also attracted investment to surrounding properties. Last year, Raleigh-based Envision Homes unveiled its plans to bring a set of 30 high-end townhomes situated on 2 acres at 115 East Park Street, overlooking the park from the north. Meanwhile, area brokers and developers praised the town for taking proactive steps to address parking, streetscapes, and infrastructure in and around downtown amid the growth. As developers plan bigger and more urban developments, the town has been quick to partner with them for improvements to the town, including upgraded streets and districts, as well as working with developers to add additional spaces to the town parking supply. Additionally, the town built a new 600-space parking deck at the site of the new Cary Regional Library and Downtown Park. They understood the need for parking to continue growth, and they are strategizing. Withers says, for them to continue to grow, parking will have to grow. I think their processes are great. Today, downtown Cary continues to grow and urbanize with increasingly walkable streets and pedestrian-facing restaurants and retailers catering to passersby. At a recent Cary Chamber of Commerce meeting, Cary Director of Economic Development Ted Boyd pointed out the recent openings of Cafaro's, which looks to serve just a crowd. When you're thinking about what's happening is, they offer pizza by the slice, Boyd says. That's an important distinction about the growth and evolution of our downtown. And the reason why is because it means there's enough people coming around that they can sell a pizza, not as a whole, but as a slice. Some retailers and small businesses have seen struggles, with some closing or shrinking their carry presences, though others have found opportunities to expand despite the pandemic. The biggest challenge all of us are facing is COVID and how we're going to come out of COVID, Zahn says. I think it's trending positive, and looking at the hotel numbers from the Maiden, things are trending in the positive direction. And now, with Fenton underway, and Epic Games expected to begin releasing plans this year, he says, the two projects will likely mean a great deal of additional growth and carry. And it won't stop there. Given the amount of people and companies coming to the area, I think there'll be plenty of redevelopment opportunities, Zahn says, not just in the downtown areas, but in the surrounding area in Cary, and in the surrounding communities in Apex and Holly Springs. Next, we take a look at some of the news articles scattered around this week's Triangle Business Journal. And under the heading of news comes Raleigh Parking Lot to Go Vertical. The Raleigh City Council has approved a rezoning request to allow up to 30 stories of development on a small parking lot by Marbles Kids Museum downtown, as the property's owner looks to sell the site to a buyer interested in developing it. During its April 6 meeting, council voted unanimously to approve a rezoning request to change the zoning destination of 220 East Morgan Street from commercial mixed use up to 7 stories to a commercial mixed use up to 40 stories, with conditions limiting development height to 30 stories. Conditions also limit office space to 150,000 square feet. The property owners, longtime Raleigh real estate investors Beverly and Gordon Smith, initially filed a rezoning request to allow up to 20 stories on the site as the pair looked to market the property for sale. The property has an assessed value of $5.5 million, according to county records. They upped that to 40 stories with conditions earlier this year. Council members heard from representatives from the applicant during the meeting. One person spoke in opposition to the rezoning, asking that the city council withhold approval unless the applicant added a condition requiring affordable housing. Mayor Pro Tem Nicole Stewart asked the city attorney, Robin Tatum, if it would be legal to deny the request on those grounds. Tatum said it could be legally problematic if a lack of affordable housing was the only reason for the council voting to deny. The council members voted unanimously to approve the rezoning request. Raleigh zoning caps building heights at 20 or 40 stories, but nothing in between. So anything above 20 stories requires a 40-story designation. The city's planning commission unanimously recommended approval of the rezoning during its February 23rd meeting. Also under news, under the heading of funding, comes Cary firm with ballistic tech looks to raise $3 million. A company working on new materials that can offer ballistic-like protection is looking to raise millions and is hoping investors will continue to bet on its technology. Security filings show BN Nano, led by CEO Steve Wilsinski, is trying to raise $3 million. So far, it's raised $55,150 from two investors, and it's deploying crowdfunding platforms to open up the offering, Wilsinski says. BN Nano, a company developing next-generation nanotubes capable of bringing ballistic-like protection to a polyester fiber, continues to see new applications for its technology, Wilsinski says. 2020 was interesting. Obviously, we had challenges like everyone else, he says. But what we did was focus on some internal research and development. And the R&D meant new avenues and potential moneymakers, Wilsinski says. He compares new alloy programs to a concentrated version of orange juice. They can bulk up the powers of metals like aluminum and copper. The new funds will support the company's aggressive growth strategy. The 9-person company is technically headquartered in Cary, though the bulk of the operations is in Burlington. And in news from around the state comes the article, Interest in Spec Suites on the Rise. The Carillon landlord in Uptown Charlotte is going all in on a speculative suite program at the 24-story tower and other buildings it owns in the United States. Alan Aldridge, Senior Vice President of Acquisitions, Dispositions, and Asset Management at KBS Realty Advisors, says of the real estate firm's office portfolio, spec suite activity has been particularly robust at the Carillon. The company last year built out 7 spaces ranging from 1,500 to 14,000 square feet at the building. So far, 2 of the suites are committed. 1 has a letter of intent, and a 4th has 2 interested parties in discussions, Aldrich says. Newport Beach, California-based KBS acquired Carillon in 2016 for $147 million. Last year, we immediately looked at going into capital mode, repositioning buildings, redoing common areas on the ground floor, and main entry areas, and in addition, expanding our spec suite programs, Aldridge says. Carillon was probably the biggest one in terms of number of spaces. Spec suites, essentially turnkey office space, are by no means a revolutionary concept, but some real estate owners, such as KBS, are reporting greater success in leasing those types of office spaces during the pandemic as compared to traditional space, especially in older towers. Aldrich says even though Uptown Charlotte has been one of the slower office markets in the KBS portfolio to rebound since COVID-19, interest in spec suites has outpaced traditional space. Even in new buildings, landlords are doubling down on the trend. As Bank of America Tower, owner Highwoods Properties, which is based in Raleigh, started a spec suite program in the fall, recently leased the first space to law firm Haynes and Boone. At Camp North End, Atco Properties and Management and Shorenstein Properties recently finished building out a 45,000 square foot office building at the property's Gamma Goat building. As some companies look to downsize or be more efficient with space, spec suites can provide a compelling option. Spec suites frequently have short or more flexible lease terms, which could provide a degree of comfort to companies still unsure what their office space needs will be. There are also non-pandemic specific tailwinds for pre-built office space. A 2018 Newmark report found spec suites in Washington, D.C. leased up in an average of 3.4 months, compared to 16.5 months for customized space. As we near the end of this week's Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page, and under the editor's notebook, we find the column, In This Roaring Stock Market, Equity is Not in Play. Inexplicably to some, and yet not surprising to others, Wall Street is roaring. Buoyed by the Biden administration's $1.9 trillion stimulus package and talks of another $2.3 trillion infrastructure improvement plan and climate control measures, big corporations are rising in value exponentially. I'm still not clear why some measures are considered infrastructure improvements, but details will soon emerge. Corporations are salivating at the idea of new government contracts with healthy margins, which also leads to jobs added to the system. The Dow Jones Industrial Average cruised over 33,000 in recent days, along with other market indexes such as the S&P 500 that hit 4,000 for the first time in its history. But that's not the whole story. Late last month, the S&P Dow Jones Indices and Credit Scoring Agency, Experian, released its consumer credit default indices that showed, 1, the composite, which measures changes in consumer credit defaults, was up 5 basis points in February. 2, the bank card default rate was up 21 basis points. And 3, the first mortgage default rate was up 5 basis points in February. Now, March numbers are not out yet, but if the auto loan default rates are any indication, the overall consumer credit default rate is headed in the wrong direction. Almost 9% of subprime auto loan borrowers have fallen behind their payments. Since the federal government did not have a plan for auto loan borrowers, the way it offered relief for student loan holders and apartment renters, the world is about to get real for many in our communities. One observation about these numbers, most of the rates are still below the pre-pandemic levels in early 2020. So if we're working on solving the issue, maybe we're not staring at that K-shaped recovery where many of us are doing well and yet many more are struggling. Meanwhile, most public company stocks are hitting new highs, delivering very good news to people holding these stocks in their retirement accounts through mutual funds and other securities. So what happens to the folks that are hurting? Are they looking for even more federal help? Are they not looking for work? Are they getting jobs, but at a lower wage? Last week, the government announced almost 1 million jobs were added to the U.S. economy, blowing away projections. But could all of this be fool's gold? Let's not forget these sweeping fiscal packages offered by the Trump and Biden administrations keep pouring in trillions of dollars to jumpstart an economic rebound. Labor data show that may be working, but for how long? What happens when we stop this stimulus train and let the economy run on its own? What are we going to do with inflation then? That precisely is the time when we will find out the real effect on U.S. households. If people who are currently struggling to make ends meet do not find themselves out of the hole, and if all the moratoriums on halted loan payments elapse in the next few months, watch out. Things are likely to get ugly. That's why equity is important. An uneven recovery will inevitably bring down the prosperous meter over time. As much as business owners, executives, and skilled workers would like to see Wall Street continue to hit new records and spawn fresh capital, that money needs to flow downstream. If not, the ship starts leaking water. Now we arrive at this week's guest column that's on the Viewpoint page, and the author of this column is Bill Rowe. Bill Rowe is General Counsel and Deputy Director of Advocacy for the North Carolina Justice Center. His column is entitled, NC Unemployment Insurance Law in Need of Change. The time has come. While the federal debt has been paid off, a temporary tax on employers has been lifted, the trust fund balance is $2.7 billion as of December 2020, and employers' taxes are the fourth lowest in the country. However, North Carolina's system remains near the bottom of the rest of the nation in terms of its capacity to assist workers. Prior to House Bill 4, the Tax Foundation ranked North Carolina's unemployment insurance program fifth most favorable for businesses in the U.S. So what are some of the recommended changes to the North Carolina unemployment insurance laws? Well, Rowe lists about seven of them, so here they are. Increase the maximum duration for receiving benefits, as Georgia and Michigan have recently done, to 26 weeks, like the majority of states. Second, increase the maximum benefit amount, putting more money in workers' pockets after March 14, 2021, when federal supplement of $300 ends. North Carolina set its maximum benefit at $350 in 2013. It was not indexed, as other states provide, to increase over time. Before 2013, the maximum weekly benefit amount was 66.75% of the state's weekly average weekly insured wage. Currently, 39 states have higher maximum amounts than North Carolina, including Kentucky, Virginia, West Virginia, and Arkansas. North Carolina should set the maximum weekly benefit to 50% of the state's average weekly insured wage, which is $1,002, so the maximum would reach $500 and continue to increase as wages go up. Next, change the way North Carolina calculates weekly benefits, a method used by no other state. Changing the benefit calculation will put more benefits in workers' pockets. Before 2013, North Carolina based benefits on a worker's highest quarter wages. North Carolina should return to basing benefits on the highest quarter wages. Next, address roadblocks that prevent part-time workers from receiving benefits. Thousands of workers have had their hours cut due to the pandemic and are struggling to make ends meet. North Carolina only allows a part-time worker to earn up to 20% more than their benefits amount to qualify for part-time benefits. With benefits at the bottom of the country, few workers qualify. The earnings allowance should be increased and benefits need to be increased, certainly to what has been done in Idaho. Next, adopt work-sharing and short-time compensation option for employers. Work-sharing short-time compensation allows an employer to reduce the hours of all or some workers instead of laying off a portion of the workforce. Workers with reduced hours are then eligible for partial unemployment benefits to supplement their paychecks. For example, instead of laying off 5 workers, an employer can reduce the schedules of 25 workers by 20%. 27 states provide this option to their employers. The CARES Act provides $100 million in grants to states to implement, improve, and promote work sharing. While recent guidance from the U.S. Department of Labor recommends states adopt work sharing. Stop charging unemployed workers with an overpayment of benefits when they are not at fault for the overpayment. Prior to 2013, if a worker received benefits based on a determination by the State Department of Employment Security and did not commit fraud or provide misleading information, they were not charged with an overpayment. This was changed in 2013. Finally, restore spousal relocation, undue family hardship, and health reasons as good cause for leaving employment. Prior to 2013, a worker could qualify for benefits if they left a job because of health condition, needed to care for a family member, or could not accept a particular shift because of child care or the care of an aged or disabled parent, or had to move because their spouse had unemployment in another location that made commuting impossible. This week's Business Pulse question, where does your company stand on returning to the office? 52% says, we've already opened our office. 22% said, we haven't set a date for return to the office. Well, that music means we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ancreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. If you have comments or questions, call us, 919-832-5138.